I signed a lease for this to be my catering kitchen. And Boston didn't allow that. So now I have a signed lease and, you know, an idea that isn't going to happen. So I automatically start throwing around ideas. Oh, shoot, I have this space. Like, what am I going to open in it?
You're in the mood for food, but you don't really feel like cooking. It's either too hot to turn the oven on, or you've had such a long day. Do you really want fast food? What if there's a place to get a chef-cooked meal that you can just heat up at home? Enter Johnny's Takeaway. In this episode, you'll hear all about Chef Johnny Burke's restaurant with no seats and learn how it almost started by accident. Welcome to Small Business Stories presented by Vistaprint. I'm your host, Jeff Israel. Johnny Burke, thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me in today.
So tell me a little bit about Johnny's Takeaway.
So Johnny's Takeaway is a fast casual concept in West Roxbury, Massachusetts. We do prepared meals to go. The way we like to explain ourselves is we're a restaurant with no tables. So we actually cook, cool, and package all of our entrees. They're ready to heat and eat and just grab from our refrigerator and take home. It's just kind of easy access to a healthy, delicious meal for people on the go and need to kind of stock up their refrigerator, but don't want to necessarily go out to a restaurant.
It's an amazing concept, but just before we go any further, I wanted to take a step back and ask you how you got into cooking.
Yeah. So the way I got into cooking was I really didn't enjoy college, but worked at a pizza joint in high school. So my cousins own a relatively well-known bar in Jamaica Plain, Doyle's.
Yep.
And I started cooking there on the weekends when I was going to college. Quickly found that I did not want to be going to college. So I just started cooking at Doyle's. And after about 6-8 months there, all my friends were away at college. So I felt like I had to go cook somewhere that was a destination.
Yep.
You know, 18-year-old mindset. So could have just worked here in Boston and would have made sense. But went down to Miami out of all places. So, you know, Boston kid in Miami fits really well.
Yep.
So we were there. I was there, excuse me. And when I was there, I just kind of like threw my resume out everywhere. I had no background in cooking besides Doyle's, but no one down there knew what Doyle's was. So I was able to kind of like, all right, cool, dial, you know,
yep,
just like buffed it up a little bit, like, you know, the stations I ran and
sure,
things like that.
Sure.
No, I knew nothing. I knew nothing. I couldn't even tell you the difference between cilantro and parsley if you had held it up in front of me, you know, like it was bad. But I got a job at got a couple like small jobs, and then I got like the phone call, but it was from Emeril's.
Wow.
So Emeril Lagasse's restaurant. He was not there, but I worked there, and that I learned a ton there. I learned what cilantro was versus parsley. Like, I learned so much stuff. I learned to run a station. I learned to season everything. I still remember I handed a salad over to the chef, and he was like, "Did you season this?" And I was like, "What? Like, yeah, the dressing's on it." He was like, "No, like salt and pepper." I was like, "Salt and pepper on a salad? Like, what?" It was like mind blowing
right,
that you seasoned everything. So, that was kind of like, "Whoa, this is cooking." That's when I really like realized, like, you know, at Doyle's I did pizzas and sandwiches and, you know, never really had even the, like, didn't even know I had an appetite to learn more. And so when I came back, I applied at the Charles Hotel because I was living in Newton.
Mm-hmm.
Got to work under Peter Davis there for like a year and a half and did catering, which was, you know, I never really looked at catering as like, wow, this is where I'll end up. And I still don't really see us as that, but we kind of have more of a like cook a large quantity, cool it safely.
It's like a cousin of catering kind of.
Yeah. So it's what I learned after being kind of there. I got to experience eating out and went to a restaurant in the South End called The Butcher Shop, which is owned by Barbara Lynch, still is, and fell in love. And there was a chef there who's now one of my best friends, and he like kind of opened my eyes just via the one meal I ate there to like what else was out there. You know, catering was always kind of just like a catering menu and you bang it out and you just cook it and you serve a ton of people. Whereas this small, you know, 32 seat restaurant in the South End, you had to think about everything a lot more. Like, you could just prep up 10 orders of something. So I went back to work the next day, told my chef that I was going to be putting my resume out, but I'm only applying one place. So don't worry. Like I'm working for you or I'm working for this place. That was it. And I got hired. And that's kind of just where like the world kind of cooking opened up to me. Like people thought about this stuff in a way different, like way than I had ever thought about it.
Wow. That's an incredible story. So how did you think of the idea for Johnny's Takeaway?
So my background before Johnny's Takeaway was actually, I was a personal chef. So I worked exclusively for one family here in Boston. And a few years ago, when talking with people after I actually landed the job working for the family, people always were commenting, man, I wish I had a personal chef. And it happened a lot. So obviously my entrepreneurial mindset, which is kind of always been around, kind of got me thinking about how do I serve and cook for more than one person or one family. So what ended up happening was I kind of locked in about 3 or 4 people that had said this to me, that they would love a personal chef. So I found a way to kind of cook for these 3 to 4 families. And weekly, I was just cooking in my kitchen, packaging up meals and dropping them off at their houses. So that kind of turned organically into 3 or 4 families to actually cooking for the entire street. A couple, I'd say, not big deals, but a couple more local celebrities tweeted about it. And one Saturday I woke up and I had 4 families and I had 100 sign up overnight.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was kind of like, whoa, like one tweet caused this whole kind of large sign up. So I realized that, all right, well, let's keep doing this. So I actually started a meal delivery service. That's how Johnny's Takeaway originally started. Had a different name. And we had a kitchen space. We cooked out of Brookline. We had 3 delivery drivers, 3 chefs. We used what we called dead assets. So we actually partnered with restaurants that didn't cook breakfast or lunch and rented their space from them before they even got in. So we kind of had this like rogue kitchen. We would like come in, cook, cool, package, clean the kitchen before even the prep cooks even got in. You know, what was tough about that was we turned into a logistics company. It was really just like figuring out the orders and then getting them to them. So we were like, think of us just as Uber Eats or someone. We were just the, you know, we had no face. We had no brick and mortar space. When the climate started to change and people started to jump into this arena of prepared meals, what happens is when all these people jump into this realm, like you have no loyalty because like, well, I have a $5 off coupon here, or this person's doing 20% off or this one. And you just kind of follow that around. And I actually decided to kind of move on from what used to be called covered meals to focusing on the catering concept a little bit more. So fast forward a couple of years, my wife and I bought a house in West Roxbury and a little bakery that went out of business. I signed a lease for this to be my catering kitchen. And Boston didn't allow that.
So like logistic, like, or like, however their legalese, blue laws, things like that.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of discrepancies when you call yourself a catering company. However, companies can just say they do catering, but if you call yourself a catering company, it requires a lot of things.
Sure.
From ice machines to Cambros, which are containers, to certain hot boxes, to certain square footage of refrigeration space, to just a lot of, you know, red lines that you kind of gotta cross, you know, cross your T's, dot your I's. And when you just kind of think you can start something, especially in the city, prices suddenly are just, you know, things I didn't think about are going up. So now I have a signed lease and, you know, an idea that isn't going to happen. So I automatically start throwing around ideas. Oh, shoot, I have this space. Like, what am I going to open in it? I'm a chef. I've been trained classically. We've done a lot of different concepts. We've had a lot of fun cooking, but I'm not going to just suddenly open a taco shop or a barbecue place. Like, I haven't really ever focused on one thing enough to like just be like, I'm going to do that. And that's what we're doing.
Right.
The thing I did know was cooking, cooling, packaging, prepared meals, and how to kind of get that going. And so Covered Meals was suddenly born again in Boston when I couldn't call my place a catering company.
Wow. So you sort of, it almost like a strange loophole pivoted you back into where you are now, which is sort of where you were kind of experiencing tons of success before. And now, boom, Johnny's Takeaway is back.
100%. It was weird. It was, all right, why? I had to look at it and be like, why did I stop this? And was it because of the business, or was it because of the, you know, the point in my life 2 years ago, I needed to stop it. And we came back to it, and it was, you know, not the right time and place back then. And a lot of it for me too is Covered Meals. We were in, you know, a rogue stealth kitchen. No one could find us. We totally were legal. We were, you know, viewed by the health department, everything. We did everything, but we couldn't actually meet the people that were, you know, ordering from us solely because we were a convenience. We delivered to coolers, refrigerators. I mean, it's pretty wild when I tell the story that I had keys to several houses all around Boston and had never met the person in my life. People are so willing to solve a problem, a pain point in their life. And if you're giving them enough value, they'll give you a key to the house.
That's crazy. And yeah. So now too, you're going beyond sort of seemed like what kind of got you down on it. You're just doing logistics. Like you're, and now you're able to see the guest and you're still able to put the passion into it.
Totally.
How long has it been now since you opened, and what's that experience been like?
Yeah. So we signed the lease in November. As a startup, you can understand you just want to go faster, but we had to install some things that just took time, and that also requires some red tape from the city. So mm-hmm. You have to basically show them everything you're doing to bring it up to code, inspections, fire, everything. But we managed to sign the lease November 15th, and by April 2nd, the day after Easter 2018, we were open. And things are going beyond what we expected. And I think a lot of it was just like, you know, West Roxbury is such a strong community that restaurants that were really big 30 years ago are still really big right there. So some see that as like a big problem to open. But we talk to everyone that comes through the door. We absolutely like love hearing feedback, negative or positive, and we adapt, you know, and we've only been open now, what is it, almost four months yeah. or so, and we are extremely different from the day we opened. The first week I served one meal a night. Mm-hmm. The whole concept was, hey, if these breweries can release one beer and people wait in a line for it,
sure,
why can't I offer just a really good dinner, one meal a night? And when I'm out, I'm out. Mm-hmm. So that was us being the crew we are at Johnny's Takeaway. We started to feel really bad when people came in and they were just like, just shepherd's pie tonight. And you're like, yep.
So now there's, you know, multiple options, correct? When you come
Absolutely.
In.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, now we have a full lunch menu. Driven by, you know, a chef mentality. We make everything in-house. We have 9 sandwiches total. And then, yeah, we always have 5 dinner options. We have a bunch of side salads. And, you know, our bread and butter really is just that. We take a lot of thought and care into every meal that we design because we think of it as a finished product as you take it home. So, like, what reheats well? What is going to present well? And where are we not going to have any conflicts of our margins for error from our door to your oven? So from day one opening to where we are today, I mean, sometimes I feel like I might change things too quickly,
yeah.
Not give it too much of a chance. But I think that's kind of the positive of it, too, because we listen. The reason we're just changing it is because, you know, we've heard enough from enough people that you know, it's just something they might not necessarily want, or we just see it sitting there.
What are some of the ways that you solicit customer feedback?
Sure. So we're pretty in touch and relatively small right now. So we're really lucky to be able to talk with everyone that comes through the door. When you walk in, the shop is literally almost the kitchen.
Right.
So it's a big open space. Maybe shouldn't say big. It's an open space. It's a small spot. It's 650 square feet total. We do almost everything on social media. And I mean, everyone's heard the statistic. I think it's 9 to 11 hours a week on social media.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's probably being modest.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like I think a lot of people are spending a lot of time there. So it's a huge outlet for us. So we find by getting feedback is just, you know, using our social media outlets probably sounds repetitive to people, but like it really is effective. And once in a while, we'll use something like SurveyMonkey, but we've yet to even do it just because we talk to so many people and a lot of people just kind of tell us.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen both in action. I've been to your shop before. I've seen you guys sort of operate and chat with everybody, which is awesome. And then your social, you seems like you take a lot of advantage in terms of the timing, or, you know, we're in the middle of summer right now. And I've seen posts that say like, do you really want to turn on your oven right now? It's,
right.
You know, 100 degrees. Yeah. And I'm like, my wife and I will be thinking about dinner and we'll be saying, do we really want to turn the oven on right now? It's 100 degrees. Like
right.
Maybe we'll head over to Johnny's and get like a lobster roll or something like that. Do you do all the social media?
Yeah, it's been really funny because I'm not someone that's really good at content. And it just kind of took me, you know, after having covered meals, like you can be super critical on your content, but once you post it, like no one else is super critical. Meaning if you're posting a picture of something, most people, especially food, most people are going to love it.
Right.
So, you know, trying to be witty or something, like, don't overthink it. It's just literally like post it, be relevant and have people thinking of you and it goes down well. And I used to kind of be intimidated by it. Now I do it all. And we get people coming in being like, man, whoever's doing your social media, awesome job. And I don't tell them it's me because just in case it does go over poorly. But yeah, people have been, you know, saying it's really good. You know, iPhones really help.
Yeah. There's lots of new tech skills that you can do from that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it really benefits us to have our phones out. I come from training in kitchens. That was like no phones out. No, you know, you're dialed in. We really were big advocates for making sure that even the folks that are either eating our food or the crew that's working at Johnny's, like, have your phone out, take pictures, you know, blast it around, share it, because pictures just do so well compared to maybe just a link and something, you know, just kind of written. And, you know, we'll also look into things that, like, you know, every day now there's like a national something day.
Sure. It was so just like, National Hot Dog Day.
It was National Hot Dog Day, National Fried Chicken Day, National, you know, there's always something. And making sure we stay relevant on the food calendar is also, you know, you're missing an opportunity when it could be something that is one of your top sellers and it just happens to be that day.
Cool. And what is, you talked a little bit about the process of, meal planning and things like that. Like, how does that all work? The concepting with your staff, like who gets the, I imagine you get the final decision, but like, what's it like? Is it collaborative? How does that all work?
Yeah. It's funny. It's kind of changed. It used to be what I wanted to do would go on the menu. Starting before Johnny's Takeaway, we had an alternating menu every week. So every week we were doing something different, which is easy when I'm in the kitchen, I'm running everything and almost like basically cooking everything too with some extra hands. We have grown as well as become a lot more popular than, you know, expected right out the gates, that it's really kind of caused me to really learn how to, I don't want to use the word delegate, but like more comfortably step away from doing everything.
Yep.
And so I'm really blessed with having, like, we have a small team right now. It's three of us full time and we do everything, but I'm almost not in the kitchen anymore, because the two that are in the kitchen are so strong that we all collaborate together. So we really do kind of approach the menu writing process with our fundamentals and our backgrounds of like no additives, but then, you know, finished product needs to arrive at your house well, reheat well, and look like a restaurant plated it. So it's really good how we're going about it. The process isn't exactly figured out, but we have a really good starting base, and a lot of it's seasonality, what we want to cook, as well as like just what works in that space.
That's perfect. And seems like sort of your, again, I don't want to say delegation either, but the conversation, I guess it's once you felt comfortable, like with everybody on, everyone's on the same vibe and 100%. Message, and that makes it a lot easier.
Yep.
Were you always, in terms of being a leader and being a leader of a kitchen, is that something you had to work at? Is it a skill you always had, or how has that progressed?
Yeah, that was probably the hardest part for me. My strengths are really what I've had to try and figure out.
Mm-hmm.
No one's good at everything, but I do know that, I mean, I am not the best chef in the world by any means. I can make really good food with a really solid crew and get it to you, and you're going to be really happy about it. And what I learned first was, for Johnny's Takeaway to be successful, I actually had to remove myself from the kitchen more. And I've always been the, all right, well, I'll just do it. You know, it's easier for me just to do the work than to tell you to do it, because I always struggled with conveying what I needed done well.
Mm-hmm. And you just figure, I'll just do it.
Yeah. And I started to realize a lot, especially under the stress of everything in a kitchen, I could get everything done, delegate, but I would come across as an asshole. Like, just do this, do it this way. And then I'd like finish the day with like a pat on the back and, hey, how was it? Without like really regarding like people's feelings in the moment. And that changed dramatically as I grew up and was in more kitchens. That didn't fly. But when we started Covered Meals, and when I was starting up Johnny's Takeaway, a lot of the advice from the folks that had mentored me and advised me over the years were saying they were really excited to see me not in the kitchen, which was cool. Like, oh, that's awesome. And it meant that, you know, the vision that you have when you start something, it's yours. So it's almost easier to find someone with greater strengths than you do in a certain area, so you can lead a vision, or, you know, you can kind of guide the ship more than just actually doing everything. And that's what I'm working on every day. And my crew like shows me every day that like I really shouldn't be in the kitchen every day. Yeah. Like, you need to know your role. And especially as an owner, it's really important to hire smartly and build their team around you, but like to also really trust them.
That's pretty special that, you know, your mentors were able to identify that in you, that you would be someone that could like lead a vision and lead, you know, something bigger, when they said,
right,
we can't wait to see you away from the kitchen. And you probably like, well, what does that mean?
Exactly.
But then like looking in hindsight, that's like, wow, that's pretty incredible that they saw that in you.
Yeah. It's cool. And it's, I mean, with the mindset of constantly wanting to go faster, be bigger, I'm also just trying to like figure out my strengths, like I said. But my crew at the end of the day will just outwork everyone. You know, it's just like at the root of all this, everyone loves it. We're chefs, we're in the industry, front of house, back of house, all of it. And at the end of the day, we're having a good time cooking, working for about 10 hours, whereas it used to be 14.
Yep.
And, you know, it's ours. We get to see it. We get to deal with it. We get to, you know, do everything around it. So at the end of the day, like, we can just always outwork everyone. And that's what's just like super cool about it, is that if you don't have the that underlying passion, you're going to be burnt out.
Yep. And that sort of brings full circle to sort of what you were saying before, when you're doing Covered Meals, like you guys were doing it, but you were kind of becoming more logistical. Now you see it full circle. You can you see the customers, you see the guests, you see them enjoying picking up the meals, you hear from them, you get to, I imagine that's got to build a huge part into your attitude and everyone's attitude in taking ownership over what they're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Our social media and certain accounts for like live reviews from guests and clients and whatever customers, whatever we want to call them, are really good. And then we had a 3-star review more recently and it just kind of stung, you know, mm-hmm. it stung because the person still comes in. So that's great. But what stung about it was that we did everything, you know, it's not lost in communication to like a server error or, you know, something got served raw or anything like that. It's just some people have opinions and we're the type that would love just the opportunity to fix it, you know, but there's a lot of outlets nowadays for people to voice their opinion.
Right.
But it can sting if people don't, you know, enjoy it. And
right.
But it's always fun. People come in, they'll be like, hey, just want to let you know the rice from the enchilada the other day. Just a little, you know, a little underdone. Awesome. We'll watch out for it. And we really will,
right,
you know, like we really will. And that's, it doesn't get lost in translation. So it's really cool to be able to have the live feedback. But
definitely.
Because we are so controlling of everything and pretty small now, mm-hmm. everything, any semi-bad or even bad review kind of just stings a little bit more.
Yeah, no.
Because there's only so many fingers to point.
Yeah, and they all eventually come back, you know.
Oh, they're all at me.
Yeah. What's like maybe a dream thing that you haven't fully like nailed it yet or haven't thought about how to get it out there yet that's like in mind?
Like a dish?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, my favorite style of eating is, there's tons of different words for it, mezze, tapas, all this different stuff. But I want to just find a way to start putting like a bit more like offal, like more weird stuff from like the butcher shop days,
cool.
which is, you know, to me, they're totally normal, but pâtés, terrines, kind of trying to push the limits a little bit more of our diner in our neck of the woods over there.
I'm ready for it.
Not that people's palates aren't ready for it. I just think it's not something that's been accessible.
Sure.
Like, you know,
people are afraid of what they don't fully know.
Right. Yeah. Right. Oh man. Have you had like the duck liver mousse from Johnny's, you know, like something like that would be kind of cool to get to. We definitely, we love our approach to things. We don't want to be like a deli, you know, we're not going to be somewhere necessarily in my mind right now. You come in and grab like a pound of, you know, sliced right. ham or something.
Right.
But that like deli counter aspect of like convenience is something we like always kind of toy with. Is this too deli counter or is this like really accessible takeaway food? And that's kind of the juggle we have all the time, at least in my own head. I'm like, we want to stay different, but you don't want to be too different that it's like doesn't make sense. There's a reason prepared food came around beforehand, you know, like we just kind of created a new little package with a story, and people that really care about it make it.
That's a great way to put it. If people want to find out more about Johnny's Takeaway, where should they go?
Absolutely. So they can go to www.johnnystakeaway.com. We also are at Johnny's Takeaway on Facebook and Instagram as well.
Cool. Johnny, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me in.
Cool. Thanks so much.
Small Business Stories is presented by Vistaprint. For more advice on running your business, visit the ideas and advice section on Vistaprint.com. Or follow Vistaprint on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you know a business we should feature on Small Business Stories, email us at podcast@vistaprint.com.